Today, are future Fed cuts now being peddled back? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'm the latest post covering finance and property news. Well, this past week was a doozy in the markets as the Fed started to flip the switch on monetary policy, which took markets by surprise. Yields plunged and stocks and bonds prices soared. And this time it's more than the Magnificent Seven stocks leading the charge. In fact, the Russell 2000 ETF has more than doubled the return of both the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100 over the last month. And the S&P Regional Banking ETF, which has taken the brunt of the bear's ire this year, it's still down year to date, was up 36% since the beginning of November. The market's feverish speculation about future interest rate cuts has further loosened the global financial conditions, storing up risks for euphoric stock and bond markets if central banks view the easy funding environment as a reason to hold borrowing costs high. In fact, both Goldman Sachs and Jefferies said long, short hedge funds, which take positions betting stocks will rise and fall, got hit hard after Fed Chair Jerome Powell's comments on Wednesday. Jefferies' trading desk said that the long, short hedge funds on Wednesday and Thursday had their second worst two-day move ever, as long positions outperformed short bets. The investment bank analysed a metric called the long-short spread that shows the performance of long versus short trades. Goldman Sachs said systemic equities long-short hedge funds on Thursday had their worst day in roughly 8 years. Negative performance was driven by a squeeze in crowded shorts, momentum sell-off, and rally in high beta and high volatility stocks, the managing director at Goldman said in the note. The investment bank's global markets team said systematic long-short funds based on a computer-driven strategy were down 2.8% on Thursday. That's the worst single day since at least January 2016. The Goldman note pointed to crowded trades, mainly shorts, momentum and volatility among key negative drivers, adding that there was high volatility. Still, systematic funds are still up roughly 30% on the year-to-date basis. In fact, on Friday, US equities gave back some of their weekly gains while the dollar advanced after New York Fed President John Williams told CNBC that it was premature to be thinking about a March rate cut. We view its comments as an effort to guide to a slower slope of normalization over several years, as well as a challenge to the strong market bets on March for the first cut, Krishna Guha, vice chairman at Evercore, said. Guha views the first rate cut as more likely to come in May or June. Williams' Atlanta counterpart Rafael Bostic told Reuters he was only penciling in 0.25 percentage point rate cuts in the latter half of 2024. Swaps traders were eyeing as many as 6 rate cuts for next year. So in the end, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.15% to 37,305. The S&P 500 was down 0.1% to 4,719. And the NASDAQ Composite added 0.35% to 14,813. That's a record for the first time in 2 years. While US stock benchmarks lost momentum on Friday, the S&P 500 and the tech heavy gauge both notched 7-week winning streaks. The S&P 500 has rallied more than 10% in less than 2 months, so some digestion of the rally is needed. Tom Essay, the founder of the 7 Report newsletter, wrote, that likely will come in the near term, especially if Fed officials rhetorically push back on the market's enthusiasm in the next week or two. The US dollar rebounded against the basket world currencies, but the index registered its biggest weekly drop in a month after the Fed's dovish pivot. And in contrast, the Fed's European counterparts maintained a tougher stance, which had boosted the euro and the pound on Thursday. The dollar index rose 0.63% and the euro was down 0.88% to 1.0895. The yield on the 10-year bond, the benchmark for everything from mortgages to corporate debt, broke back below 4% for the first time since August to 3.914. And the rate on the 2-year hit 4.449, still, by the way, in a recession flagging inversion. Bond yields have been markedly volatile this year as market participants try to determine what the new normal for interest rates will be. Carol Schiff, Chief Investment Officer of BMO Family Office, wrote, "We suspect the longer-term new normal for the 10-year Treasury yield will be in the range of 4% to 4.5%. Traders had also to contend with the year's largest quarterly options and futures expiry and its potential to spark volatility. A staggering $5.4 trillion worth of contracts tied to stocks and indices went off the board on Friday. Even with Williams squelching some of the market's ebullience, the Fed's tone this week was more dovish than that from European peers. The European Central Bank Governing Council member Mardis Muller on Friday said that markets were getting ahead of themselves in betting that the ECB will start cutting interest rates in the first half of next year. And on Thursday, ECB President Christine Lagarde said the bank had not even discussed rate cuts at all. The contrast between the resilient US economy adopting a dovish stance and faltering European economies holding on to a hawkish position gives the impression that something is amiss, a senior analyst at SwissQuote wrote in a note to clients. Global financial conditions, viewed as a leading indicator of economic performance, are now at their most accommodative since early August, according to a widely followed index produced by Goldman Sachs. The index, which broadly tracks corporate borrowing costs and how easily companies can tap stock markets for funding, remains close to its levels of March 2022. That was just before the US Federal Reserve and European Central Bank and other big central banks embarked on aggressive monetary tightening campaigns to bring inflation under control. Goldman's US version of this index shows conditions are the most accommodative since July the 26th. If central banks do not validate these moves, if they don't cut interest rates and they just sort of ignore it, then financial conditions are going to tighten again, they said. There is now, by the way, a roughly 67% chance that the first rate cut will come as soon as March, according to the markets, which seems overdone to me. Investors will be watching for economic data next week, including personal consumption expenditures and initial jobless claims that may sway the Fed's outlook for inflation. A soft landing, in which growth remains resilient while inflation slows towards the Fed's target, has become the base case scenario for Wall Street firms, including BMO Capital Markets and Oppenheimer Asset Management. The firms see the S&P 500 at 5,100 and 5,200 next year, compared to the current level of 4,700. Some investors believe yields will continue to fall, though. Jack McIntyre, portfolio manager with Brandywine Global, said the week's rapid drop in yields was likely aided by bearish investors unwinding their bets after being caught off guard by the Fed pivot. Short bets against 2-year treasuries hit record levels earlier this month, according to data from the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Though yields might pair some of that move in the near term, McIntyre expects the decline to resume as inflation cools, with the 10-year settling between 3.5 and 3.7% in the middle of next year. Arthur Laffer, president of Laffer Tengela Investments, is less bullish on government bonds. The swift decline in yields is already loosening financial conditions, potentially making it more difficult for the Fed to cut rates next year without risking a snapback in inflation, he said. Laffer points to data such as the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now estimates, which shows fourth quarter GDP rising by 2.6%, more than 1 percentage point higher than in mid-November. The rally is overdone, and the market has moved too fast, he said. Economic data released on Friday also signaled an uptick in US business activity, which shows the manufacturing sector continues to struggle. Oil prices notched their first weekly gains in 2 months, as the expectation of US rate cuts next year boosted the economy and crude demand, and that forced the bears to loosen their grip, with US crude settling 0.29% higher at $71.78 per barrel, while Brent settled at $76.92 per barrel, up 0.34 on the day. The potential for deeper rate cuts is expected to cushion the economy against possible slowdowns, keeping demand for crude intact in the US, the largest consumer of crude in the world, at the time when record US production has stoked excess supply concerns and weighed on sentiment. We're actually producing more oil in the US as a result of energy prices being where they are, Sean O'Hara, president of Pacer ETFs, said. While excess supply or a severe economic downturn could pressure oil prices, there is still a need to refill the strategic petroleum reserve, which is at the low end of capacity. China, the largest importer of crude, continues to face a bumpy economic recovery as data show consumer and investment spending increase at slower than expected paces. For 2024, oil demand in China is the biggest unknown, Louise Dixon, an analyst at Rystad Energy, told Bloomberg in a recent interview, estimating around 600,000 barrels per day of oil demand growth out of China for next year, but the bulk of that depends on how the economy performs. The International Energy Agency helped the market earlier this week by slightly lifting its oil demand forecast for 2024, but the IEA's forecast for demand is still much lower than that suggested by OPEC. Now, gold futures notched a weekly gain but dropped 0.54% on the day to $2,033 an ounce. The prospect of lower interest rates reduces the opportunity cost of investing in gold, which offers no yields and is driven largely by sentiment and safe haven demand. In fact, gold entered the US trading session on Wednesday before the FOMC at below $2,000 and blasted back above $2,000 as the Fed chair spoke. Now, it's just worth thinking about this. Gold actually averages around 29.2% gains during the previous dozen Fed rate hike cycles. So if this current one ended in late July, which looks perhaps increasingly likely, gold rallied a modest 3%. But these gains are skewed low by an unusual event leading into it, with the Russia and Ukraine conflict igniting a massive geopolitical gold spike. So gold entered this hiking cycle relatively high. European shares ended nearly flat to cap a week of rising rate cut expectations and posted their fifth consecutive weekly gain. The Pan-European Stocks 600 index rose just a little, but the MSCI gauge of stocks around the globe shed 0.06%. European stock markets edged higher on Friday, continuing the post-Fed rally, even after the more cautious stance from the European Central Bank and the Bank of England. The DAX index in Germany traded flat. The CAC 40 in France traded up 0.28%, but the FTSE in London fell 0.95%. Both the European Central Bank and the Bank of England kept their interest rates unchanged on Thursday as widely expected, but they also maintained plans to keep policy tight well into next year to combat inflation, which still remains above target. The ECB said policy easing wasn't even brought up in a two-day meeting, and the Bank of England said rates would remain high for an extended period. And by the way, Norway's central bank even hiked rates. French consumer prices fell 0.2% in the month of November. And that's an annual rise of 3.5%. And the downturn in Eurozone business activity surprisingly deepened in December, according to the closely watched surveys, which indicate the bloc's economy is almost certainly in recession. It was a broad-based decline, with activity deteriorating in both Germany and France, and across services and manufacturing. The last quarter, the Eurozone economy contracted 0.1%, according to official data, and December's Purchasing Managers' Index, seen as a good gauge of economic health, suggested activity has now declined in every month of the quarter. That would mark two consecutive quarters of economic decline. HCOB's preliminary composite PMI, compiled by S&P Global, fell to 47 this month, from November's 47.6, confounding expectations in a Reuters poll of an uptick to 48 and marking its seventh month below the 50s level, separating growth from contraction. The drop back in the Eurozone composite PMI in December provides more evidence that the economy is in recession, said Andrew Kenningson of Capital Economics. In Germany, the downturn worsened, pointing to a recession in Europe's biggest economy at the end of the year. Meanwhile, activity declined faster than expected in France as demand for goods and services in the Eurozone's second biggest economy deteriorated further. Germany's economy is set to shrink slightly this year and barely grow next as demand from abroad is weak, government subsidies for the green transition are curbed, and high interest rates dampen activity, according to the Bundesbank. But interestingly, companies in Britain's huge services sector saw another pickup in growth this month, suggesting the economy has just enough momentum to avoid a recession, for now at least. In a significant move signalling the banking industry's shift towards digital services, Lloyds Banking Group announced the closure of 45 branches, including 22 Halifax, 19 Lloyd, and 4 Bank of Scotland locations. This development is part of a larger pattern of branch closures across the sector, with a total of 623 branches shutting down over the current year. The closures reflect a strategic pivot by Lloyds Banking Group as it adopts to changing customer behaviours, as they say, of course they would, which increasingly favour online and mobile banking solutions over traditional high street branches. But again, it's the same old, same old. It's cheaper for them to service digitally, never mind what customers want. The transition to digital bank is not unique to Lloyds, with NatWest Group revealing further plans for more branch closures, another 19, predominantly next year. This industry-wide retreat from physical branches is expected to continue, with Lloyds projecting at least 276 branch closures within its network for this and the upcoming year. A majority of those closures are scheduled for March and April next year, with additional discontinuations planned for August and November. In fact, Barclays is leading this year's retrenchment with plans to cease operation at 185 locations. Lloyd followed with 131 closures, and Virgin Money is set to withdraw from the high street with a closure count hitting 40. NatWest is responsible for 116 closures. Other institutions in TSB, Royal Bank of Scotland, the Ulster Bank and Nationwide contribute to the total, bringing the Lloyds Banking Group's projected closures to at least 276 by the end of next year. This, of course, is a continuing disaster, and unfortunately the retreat is often from areas that still need access to cash, which is getting harder and harder. Similar themes, of course, as in Australia. Now, in Asia, there was some positive news out of China early on Friday as industrial production grew 6.6% year-on-year in November, according to data from the National Bureau of Statistics. The reading was above expectations for growth of 5.6% and accelerated from the 4.6% growth seen in the prior month. A major factor behind the strong reading was a low basis for comparison, though, given that the Chinese factories were still struggling with COVID-era lockdowns in late 2022. That said, China slid further into disinflation in November, while business activity remained weak and retail sales grew by less than expected. Most Asian stocks rose sharply on Friday, though, extending recent gains following dovish signals from the Federal Reserve, while some positive economic readings from China also added to sentiment. Technology-heavy indices were by far the best performers for the day, as expectation of US interest rate cuts in 2024 drove down Treasury yields. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index was the biggest benefactor from this trade, up 2.58% on strength in heavyweight tech stocks. Broader Chinese markets slid, with the Shanghai Composite down 0.56% after mixed economic data came out. Weak retail sales and fixed asset investment data pointed to continued weakness in some aspects of the Chinese economy. Retail sales grew 10.1% year-on-year in November, but missed expectations for growth of 12.5%. While retail sales have risen steadily from the prior year, they still remain relatively weak, with discretionary spending falling sharply as consumers turned even more cautious over China's economic prospects. China's unemployment rate is around 5%. Fixed asset investment grew 2.9%, which missed expectations of 3%, as investors remained wary of making big capital investments in the country. And foreign capital flows into China in particular have dried up this year amid sluggish economic growth. Persistent weakness in the Chinese economy has drawn increasing calls for more targeted fiscal measures from the Chinese government. A flailing property sector in the wake of several high-profile defaults has also presented more headwinds to the country, and ratings agency Moody's recently cut its outlook on China to negative and flagged a potential downgrade to the country's credit rating. But Beijing remains committed to its monetary stimulus efforts. The People's Bank of China injected about 1.45 trillion yuan, or about $200 billion US dollars, into the economy through its medium-term lending facility on Friday. The move also indicated that the PBOC planned to keep its loan prime rate unchanged at record lows next week. Broader Asian markets advanced, extending gains from the prior session as the Fed said it has done raising interest rates and cuts will come through 2024. The move points to improving global liquidity levels, which are bound to draw more capital flows into risk-driven markets. Japan's Nikkei 225 added 0.93%, with the focus turning to a Bank of Japan meeting on Tuesday. The central bank is widely expected to maintain its ultra-dovish stance, presenting a positive outlook for local stocks. And data on Friday showed Japanese manufacturing activity shrank more than expected in early December, while services sector activity improved. South Korea's KOSPI benefited from the tech play, rising 0.76%, while Indian stocks achieved record highs on the Nifty 50 at 21,456, having marked strong gains over the past 2 weeks and increasing optimism over the Indian economy. The country is actually the fastest growing major economy, a development that has come under the ruling BJP party. The BJP clinched 3 key state election victories earlier this month, setting the party up for a strong general election in 2024. Now, over in Australia, a rally among the miners lifted the S&P ASX 200 0.9% to 7,442 on Friday, as the falling US dollar boosted the price of commodities, including copper, gold, oil, iron ore, and natural gas. Over a week, headlined by the US Federal Reserve's forecast of several interest rate cuts next year, Australia's benchmark share index advanced 3.4%. The Australian dollar climbed to buy 67.1 cents US at the closing bell versus 65.9 at the end of the last trading week, and it was at 52.87 against the pound. On Friday, the materials sector jumped 1.9%, with Fortescue Metals shares advancing 1.4% to a record closing high of 27.85. Iron ore peers Rio Tinto and BHP both firmed more than 2% up, and gold miners were also higher as precious metals prices reached above $2,000 again. Copper rallied along with the rest of the base metals after the positive news from the Fed. The move unleashed a bullish tone across the metal sector, which has been under pressure this year amid concerns about tighter monetary policy of central banks and how that would weigh on economic growth and ultimately demand. Chemist Warehouse Target Sigma tumbled 6.7% to 97.5 cents as the two groups pushed to get a proposed merger across the line. In fact, analysts are divided on whether the ACCC will approve the deal, and traders were spooked after the regulator knocked back a proposed merger between pathology group Healius and Australian Clinical Labs. In the tech sector, Afterpay owner Block jumped 4% to 110.80 as investors cheered plans to slash interest rates in the US. And heavily shorted lithium play Pilbara Minerals jumped 2.9% as the battery metal price rallied. Finally, in crypto, the prospect of an ETS in the US has been the subject of intense speculation and anticipation among cryptocurrency enthusiasts and investors. In a recent turn of events, the possibility of approval appears closer than ever after comments from Exchange Commission Chair Gary Gensler. Gensler has indicated a significant shift in the SEC's approach to Bitcoin ETFs, acknowledging the influence of recent court decisions. We had in the past denied a number of those applications, but the court here in DC weighed in on that, he said during a CNBC interview. This acknowledgement suggests that the regulatory body is reassessing its stance and could potentially be more open to approve a Bitcoin ETF. The implications of such a shift are substantial. An SEC-approved ETF would provide a regulated and accessible means for institutions, retail investors to gain exposure to Bitcoin without the complexity of direct cryptocurrency ownership, such as wallet management and security concerns. And moreover, his comments come amid concerns about the prevalence of fraud and compliance issues within the crypto sphere. There had been far too many fraud and bad actors in the crypto field, Gensler emphasized. He pointed out the widespread non-compliance with not only securities laws, but also with regulations around anti-money laundering and the protection of the public from malicious entities. Despite these concerns, Gensler's recent remarks about taking a new look at ETFs based on court rulings signal a potential change in the wind for cryptocurrency regulation. The SEC's acknowledgement of the need to revisit previous decisions indicates a recognition of the evolving nature of the market and the legal landscape. And while Gensler avoided directly mentioning Bitcoin ETFs, he referred to crypto securities. And of course, the crypto community sees this as a signal of impending regulatory progress. An improved Bitcoin ETF would be a monumental step forward for the cryptocurrency industry, offering legitimacy and stability in a market that has been historically volatile and very uncertain. And Bitcoin was at 42,233, down 1.44%, and off recent highs. So standing back, you can see here, the cross currents are still there. Will the Fed cut as fast as was indicated just on Wednesday, or will it take longer? And what of all those short and long positions that may be out of position now? And of course, some economies, including the UK and in the Eurozone and China, still look wobbly. And Australia, well, there also the economy is looking pretty weak, and we think that 2024 will be a pretty bad year down under. So, all to play for as we come up to the end of the year. Expect more volatility for the next couple of weeks. Expect potentially further highs to be reached on the markets. But probably hopium is still too strong and needs to moderate. Watch for a downturn in the first quarter of next year. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.